the atlas. Several options were discussed as they traced the red lines on the page.
"We need to stay away from heavily traveled roads. The smaller, the better. No interstates for sure. Here's what I'm thinking."
Bob traced his finger over the map.
"We'll take 154 here down to Highway 29. A couple of miles down is a power line right-of-way. I've ridden it before on ATVs. It will take us over here to 27, south of Whitesburg. Then, we'll go up towards Georgia 5 and head west."
As Bob was talking, his cell phone began to issue the emergency alert tone. It had become the norm to have at least one cell phone available in case the government issued any statements. The phone issued the undulating tone while vibrating on the table. Bob picked it up, anxiously awaiting to learn about whatever new shit the government was planning to lay on the public. After a moment of reading, he shook his head.
"Listen to this shit. Due to the rising levels of violence and unrest in some of the major cities, the Department of Homeland Security issues the following statement. As the private ownership and possession of firearms is now outlawed, we are stepping up the program. If you see something, say something. If you see anyone with a firearm of any type, text 99999 with the information on the individual breaking the law. This also applies to illegal radio transmitters. If you know of someone using such a device, text 99999 with the whereabouts of the equipment and the individual. For participating in the preservation of law and order, you will be rewarded with cash and commodities. These unlawful acts are adding to the violence and must be stopped. Only by working together can we return our cities to a peaceful state."
Teague pointed across the table with his fork.
"Now they want us to rat on each other? And for what? Some money?"
"What did they mean by commodities?" Christie asked.
Bob dropped the phone onto the table. "I would assume that means food, maybe fuel, who knows. But it shows they know people can't get what they need on a daily basis, and they're using it as a tool to clamp down."
Christie shook her head. "Clamp down on what? The people looting the cities? Then good."
Daniel ran his palms across the table.
"Babe, we're the ones they're talking about here. We have guns and a radio. We're the people they want turned in."
"But we haven't done anything wrong."
Gene ran a comb through his mustache.
"This isn't about right or wrong. This is about control. I worked for the government long enough to know that the number one thing they want to protect is their power."
Stuffing a piece of steak in his mouth, Teague said,
"This doesn't change shit for us, as I see it. We still need to hit the road and try to get to Texas, where there is some sanity."
"Indeed," Bob said. "But we'll need to keep all the guns out of sight."
"The radio, too," Gene added.
"I'll keep my gun out of sight, but close. If I need it, I want to have it handy," Teague said.
The conversation died down while everyone ate their steaks. The trip weighed on each of them as the night wore on. Christie and Daniel turned in early, looking to spend some quiet time before they hit the road in the morning.
Chapter 9.
Bob woke up early and sat on the edge of his bed in the glow of his alarm clock. It was 5:35 as he shook a cigarette out and lit it. Rising to his feet, his knees popped loudly and he flinched. Shaking his head, he stretched and walked to the bathroom on stiff legs. After his morning constitutionals, he came back out, scratching his crotch. Wandering around his bedroom, he picked through the clothes draped on the footboard of the bed, giving each a once-over and the all-important smell test. Finally, deciding on the least funky of the lot, he got dressed and headed for the kitchen. As he went down the hall, he could swear he smelled coffee. He was surprised when he rounded the corner and saw Teague sitting at the table, drinking a cup.
I thought I was the first one up, Bob said,
as he took a cup from the cabinet and topped it off.
I'm always up early when there's shit to do.
Pulling out a chair, Bob sat down at the table.
Well, there's plenty to do.
The only sound in the kitchen was the ticking of a clock over the microwave. The two men sat quietly for a moment before Teague spoke.
You think we'll make it?
Bob sat back in his chair.
Hell if I know, but we're about to find out.
At precisely 6 o'clock, Gene came into the kitchen.
Morning, fellers,
he said, as he poured himself a cup and pulled out another chair.
We ready to start this goat rope?
As ready as we're going to be, I guess, Bob replied. I guess I'll go wake up Romeo and Juliet. I want to get started as soon as we can, Teague said, as he stood up.
He went back to the room Daniel and Christy were using. He quietly opened the door and crept into the room. It was dark, but the sky outside was beginning to lighten and filter through the blinds. He slinked up beside Daniel and knelt down, mere inches from his face. Smiling, he reached out and ran his hand through Daniel's hair. When the sleeping man didn't move, he ran his hand over his face, caressing it lightly. Daniel smiled, and in the fog of sleep said,
Morning, babe.
Teague was trying not to laugh, a tough task. He reached out and patted Daniel on the ass. Daniel smiled again.
Are you ready? It's early.
Stifling a laugh in the deepest voice he could muster, Teague said,
Yeah, baby, I'm ready.
Daniel's eyes flew open as Christy shot upright in the bed. Her hair was a mess and in her face. She was brushing it away as Daniel bolted up in bed.
What the fuck, man? What are you doing in here?
Wakey, wakey,
Teague said as he stood up. Christy looked at Teague.
What are you doing?
Teague smiled.
Nice tits, Christy.
She looked down to see her bare chest and quickly pulled the sheet up.
Screw you, Teague. Get out of here.
Daniel swung his feet out of the bed and stood up, pushing Teague towards the door.
Get out of here, asshole.
Then he thought for a moment.
Did you grab my ass?
By now, Teague was laughing.
Oh, yeah, I grabbed it.
Be glad that's all I grabbed.
Daniel shoved him out the door and slammed it shut. Christy shook her head.
What the hell is wrong with him?
Daniel gave a slight chuckle.
That's nothing.
You should have seen us when we were younger.
After dressing and grabbing a bag with the little they were taking with them, Christy and Daniel went out to the kitchen. Gene was at the stove, cooking up some eggs, sausage, and bacon. In the oven was a pan of biscuits.
Wow, it smells awesome in here, Christy said.
Bob snuffed out a cigarette on a plate on the table. Christy wrinkled her nose at it.
I figured we should eat as much of what I have as we possibly can before we go.
Gene looked over his shoulder.
Have a seat. It will be ready soon.
The coffee pot, now on its second brew, sat on the table. Both Christy and Daniel poured themselves a cup and waited on the food. Daniel looked across the table at Teague.
Don't do that shit again.
With mock indignation, Teague asked,
Whatever are you talking about?
Holding his cup to his mouth, Daniel replied,
Whatever. Don't do it again.
Teague laughed and looked at Christy. She glared back. Being not a complete fool, Teague kept his mouth shut. It wasn't long before Gene was setting plates on the table, mounded with bacon, sausage, and scrambled eggs. Christy scooped up a spoon of the eggs and dumped them on her plate.
Gene, how did you get these so fluffy? I've never seen eggs like this before.
The ends of Gene's mustache rose up.
Learn to cook in the Navy. If there is one thing the Navy does right, it's cook.
There was little talk as they ate, each left to their own thoughts on the trip they were about to embark on. When everyone was done, Christy rose to her feet and said she'd do the dishes. Bob waved her off.
Leave them.
He looked around the kitchen.
I have a feeling I'll never see this place again.
Christy looked at him for a moment as she thought it over. Sitting back down and picking up the last piece of bacon on the plate, she said,
I guess you're right. We're either going to make it to Texas or we're not. But either way, we're probably not coming back here.
It was time to leave. There was nothing left to do. But the small group milled about the house, looking for any reason, real or imagined, not to leave. Except for Jean. He paced the driveway, checking his watch often. After nearly 45 minutes, Jean started the van and walked back into the house. Opening the door, he shouted,
The van's running! Let's go!
Daniel and Christy shouldered their small packs and headed for the van. Bob waited for Teague to leave and made one last round through his house. He wasn't a sentimental man by any means, but he did feel a slight tug at the thought of leaving and never coming back to it. It was home. He'd had others, but this was the place he had decided to spend the rest of his life. It was a physical manifestation of his life's work. It represented everything he'd achieved, despite the efforts of two ex-wives. The generator still hummed away outside, providing all-important power that brought life to home. Bob didn't bother to turn off lights as he left, leaving everything as it was. Opening the door of the van, he took one last look before getting in.
You all right?
Christy asked. Slamming the door shut, Bob replied,
Yep, let's go to Texas.
Daniel pulled out the drive and headed down the road. Where Northcutt Lane hit the Palmetto Highway, Bob's neighbor was there once again. He and another man were keeping an eye on the intersection, as they put it. Daniel rolled up beside Dale and stopped. Bob stuck his hand out the gun port.
Been good knowing you, Dale.
Dale shook it and asked,
Where are you headed?
Texas. With a look of surprise, Dale asked,
What in the hell for? Things sound a little better over there, so we're going. Good luck with that. I think you're nuttier than squirrel shit, though.
Bob smiled and handed Dale a key.
Here's the key to my place. It's open right now. Help yourself to anything there. I don't plan on coming back. The generator is still running right now. Don't know how long it will hold out, though.
Dale looked at the key.
I appreciate it, really do. We'll take care of your place for you. It'll be here for you.
Bob smiled.
One way or another, I'm not coming back here.
Dale stuck his hand in the window and smiled.
Well, hope you all make it to Texas.
Bob shook his hand and smiled back.
Me too, Dale. Me too.
Bob looked at Daniel and nodded, as he pulled out onto Highway 70 and headed south, and then turning off onto Highway 154 that melded into Highway 29. It was smooth sailing until they reached the small town of Palmetto. As they approached Main Street, the road was blocked by several large trucks and armed men. Daniel looked at Bob.
What do we do? Just slow down and do whatever they say.
Bob then swiveled in his seat and pointed at Teague.
And you better keep your shit together. No shooting, got it?
Teague nodded.
Got it.
As they approached the barricade, a large man in camouflage stepped out. He was cradling an AR-type rifle in the crook of one arm and holding the other up in a stop gesture. Daniel slowed to a stop, and the man approached the van. Others behind the barricade kept rifle barrels trained on them. In a thick southern drawl, the man asked,
What's your business?
He was wearing a hunting pattern and had what could only be a very large wad of chewing tobacco stretching his right cheek. Bob leaned forward. Pointing, he replied,
We're just headed south on Roosevelt.
Where to?
The man asked. Bob shrugged.
Does it really matter? We're not looking to stop here. We just need to get by.
The man swapped the tobacco to the other side of his mouth as he leaned forward and looked into the van. He then inspected the modifications Gene had made and asked,
"What's all this about?"
"We were in Atlanta. It was hell there. We did this so we could get out."
The man nodded.
"I damn sure wouldn't want to be in Atlanta right now. We've heard there's all kinds of craziness going on there."
Bob huffed.
"You have no idea, friend."
The man produced a small radio from a pocket, one of those FRMS types you get at Walmart. Keying it, he said,
"Let him through, Billy. You got a big van coming your way."
10-4,
came the reply. The man stepped back.
"Y'all go on. Just don't stop nowhere."
Daniel nodded.
"Thanks, we won't."
Bob waved, and the man nodded back at him as Daniel pulled forward and made the right onto Main Street. The men at the roadblock eyed them as they passed. Looking to their left, they saw several people milling about the Bojangles and Subway shops. But it was obvious that the power was off in the whole town. They passed a few people on the way out of town. They seemed to congregate in the business areas where fast food joints and other such enterprises were located. People would stop in their tracks or pause their conversations to watch the van go by. Not that a moving car was an anomaly. They passed several. Maybe it was just the look of the thing. Just past Tommy Lee Cook Road, Bob told Daniel to slow down. The power line right-of-way was just ahead, and Daniel pulled off the paved road onto the dirt two-track that ran through it. It was obviously well used by the locals. Holding on to the "oh shit" handle on the passenger side, as the van bounced down the dirt road, Bob said,
"This thing is 13 miles long."
Daniel nodded as he focused on the road ahead. The route was intersected by other roads crossing it. The occasional ditch required them to slow and cross it. As they passed a small pond, two young boys there fishing waved at them. Coming to an area that was an obvious track for off-roaders, they saw several motorbikes and four-wheelers racing around the track. Bob shook his head.
"Wasting gas. They'll regret that soon enough."
Christy leaned forward to see. "Looks like fun." Further down the road, Bob laughed and pointed.
"Check that shit out."
Daniel looked over to see a decent-sized airplane sitting on the right-of-way.
"How in the hell did they get that thing in here?"
Bob looked up at the power lines.
"I have no idea. Must be one hell of a pilot."
Slowly creeping over a section of the route that appeared to be terraced, possibly for planting, Bob pointed to the right side.
"See that little road?"
Daniel nodded.
"We have to get off here. There's a little creek up ahead that we can't cross in this."
Daniel took the small road and followed Bob's directions as he guided them through the small back roads, eventually bringing them back onto the track under the power lines, for the short leg to Highway 16. It was clear sailing to the highway just ahead.
"Bob? Bob, do you see them?"
Daniel asked in a shaky voice. Christy immediately poked her head between the front seats.
"What? What is it?"
Bob started bringing his rifle up with one hand and palmed Christy's face with the other, pushing her back.
"If you want to help, you better get a gun. Just keep going, Daniel."
As he brought his carbine to his shoulder, he shouted,
"Teague, you have permission to shoot anyone who comes up behind us."
"Copy,"
Teague shouted, as he poked his carbine through the rear window of the van. Gene picked up the shotgun and racked a shell into it.
Casually looking up, he asked,
"What seems to be the trouble, Bob?"
"Bunch of guys on ATVs, Gene, and they've all got guns."
Ahead of them was nearly a dozen or so men hanging out around a large bonfire. They were sitting on their machines drinking beer from the looks of it. All of them, even the motorcycles, had either a rack or a scabbard to hold a long gun. While this wasn't anything unusual in the rural South, the fact they were all wearing a baklava-type mask with a skull print on it was. Just as those in the city that were bent on violence, a mask is the calling card of men with ill intentions. The group suddenly noticed the van and immediately sprang to their machines. Gene picked up a carbine and tapped Christy on the shoulder.
"You know how to use this?" he asked.
She shook her head, indicating she didn't. He laid the rifle on the floor and pulled a Glock 17 pistol from the duffel bag that all of Bob's guns had been piled into.
"You know how to use this?"
Christy nodded affirmatively and snatched the pistol from him.
"Yes, I do."
She dropped the mag from the weapon. Seeing it was loaded, she quickly reinserted it and racked the slide. She looked at Gene and replied, "Daniel taught me." Gene nodded and had to grab onto the table to steady himself.
"This ain't no game, Christy. You may have to use it. If you do, make it count."
Christy nodded.
"Speed up," Bob said. Then he added, "Don't stop for anything."
The ATVs quickly split into three groups. One ran down the side of the right-of-way, as though they were getting the hell out of Dodge. The other two headed straight for them. Two of the four-wheelers had two men on board. The rear passengers stood up and raised shotguns. There was a thunderous explosion in the van as the windshield shattered and glass flew around the interior. It was only the first shot from Bob's rifle, the first of many. The van was bouncing, as were the ATVs. The shots had the desired effect of causing the machines to take evasive actions. They were quickly closing on the road. Pavement would be their ally, allowing the big diesel engine to put all that horsepower to work.
"Which way, Bob?"
Daniel shouted.
"Right,"
Bob shouted, pausing his firing just long enough to answer. The carbine firing in the van was deafening. The thunderous explosions inside the enclosed cab were tremendous. But it got even louder when Teague began to fire from the back. Gene looked back to see the machines that at first appeared to be fleeing, now coming up behind them. He stuck a finger in his ear and shook his head. Digging into his bulging shirt pocket, he pulled out a set of foam earplugs on a plastic cord. Rolling them between his fingers, he stuffed them into his ears. As the foam expanded and sealed out the incredible racket around him, he smiled. He was ready now. Pulling the box out from under the seat, he took one of the glass jars out. Using his pocket knife, he stabbed a hole into the top and stuffed a piece of a t-shirt he'd cut into strips and put with the jars. He repeated the process two more times. With the three jars in hand, he tapped Christy and motioned for her to move. She pressed herself to the side of the van, and he scooted past her. Teague was still shooting, but the machines pursuing them had split up and were now shooting back. Once he was beside Teague, he told him what he wanted to do. Teague looked at him like he was insane.
"What?" "Just grab the rope handle," he replied, pointing to the loop of rope he'd attached beside each of the rear doors.
Teague grabbed the rope and looked at Gene.
"You sure you can hit it?"
Teague smiled and sprayed the cloth with a can of barbecue lighter fluid.
"Just throw it."
With that, he handed one of the jars to Teague. Then he flipped open a Zippo lighter and lit the cloth. The size of the flame scared Teague as he tried to keep it away from him. Gene sat on the floor of the van and pressed against the wall to the side of the left door. He reached up and threw both doors open. A four-wheeler was rushing towards them since Teague had stopped firing. When the door came open, Teague immediately hurled the jar out the door like a baseball. Gene already had shouldered the 870 and brought the front beat up and pulled the trigger. Teague's throw was almost directly at the machine racing up to them, not 30 feet away. When Gene fired, not only did the shot shatter the jar and send the flaming napalm all over the riders, it killed the driver. The ATV cartwheeled wildly, throwing both men off like flaming missiles. While the driver was killed, his passenger was not. Teague watched, transfixed, as the man hit the ground, tumbling in a flaming ball. He got to his feet and pawed at the flames. Seeing their comrades die such a terrible death only enraged the others, and they raced even faster towards the van as it skidded onto the paved road. Daniel swerved wildly to avoid two cars sitting in the traffic lanes, and while he missed them, he couldn't avoid the body of a naked woman and bounced over her. If Teague hadn't been holding onto the rope handle, he would have launched from the van. As it was, Gene had to help pull him back inside as incoming rounds pinged off the thin metal body. A rider on a motorcycle came racing up alongside. He had some kind of cheap Tech-9 looking pistol. He was firing wildly. As he came up beside them, Daniel saw him in the mirror and swerved into him. With only one hand on the handlebars, he wasn't able to avoid the collision and suddenly found himself pressed against the side of the van, dropping his weapon. Christie was looking out the side window when the black mask with the skull suddenly banged into the expanded metal. The man's eyes were wide and wild. She raised the Glock and began to fire, sending not only bullets, but broken glass and shards of metal from the protective screen into the side of his head. He and the bike crashed into the pavement, the bike ending up on top of him as he skidded down the asphalt. Now that they were on the paved road, the ride became smoother. Teague went back to work with his carbine and managed to knock down another rider. Gene lit the other two jars and threw them out the back door. They shattered on the road in a thick cloud of black smoke. An ATV trailing them ran through it, leaving a rolling vortex in the smoke. But the rider didn't know it wasn't just gas. This stuff stuck. The machine came out the other side of the burning mess with all four wheels on fire. He looked down at the wheels to see only flaming masses as globs of it flew up and onto him. He skidded to a stop and bailed off the machine, ripping his clothes off. But the rest of the group had had enough. They stopped to aid him, although they kept firing at the van as the fire engulfed the machine. Gene leaned out and pulled the rear door shut. Bob was turned in his seat, looking back and shouting, "Is everyone all right? Is anyone hurt?" Christie was stunned. She sat still, looking out the window, one arm braced against the door. Gene and Teague both answered with a thumbs up. Bob grabbed Christie's shoulder and shook her. "Are you okay? Are you all right?" She looked at him and nodded. Then she saw blood on his hand. She stared at it for a moment before coming to her senses. "Bob, you're bleeding!" Daniel looked over. "What?" Bob looked at his hand.
"It's my leg. I need something, a rag or something."
Christie looked around, trying to find something. Then she snatched up her purse and dumped it on the floor of the van. She was looking for that pad she knew was in there somewhere. Grabbing the Kotex pad, she tore it from the wrapper and handed it to Bob.
"Put this on it. Where is it? Is it bleeding a lot?"
Bob took the pad and looked down. He didn't like what he saw. His lap was very bloody, but it didn't hurt that bad. And thankfully, the pain was in his legs and not in his crotch. He took the pad and pressed it onto his thigh. Daniel slowed, saying,
"We need to stop."
Bob shook his head and pointed out the shattered windshield.
"No, drive. Keep going."
Daniel kept looking at Bob until he admonished him and told him that if he wrecked the van, they'd all be in trouble. Christie, likewise, was very concerned and came up between the seats to try and help. But Bob wasn't in the mood for help.
Christy, I'm fine for now. There's nothing we can do in here. When we get up to Whitesburg shortly, we'll stop and check it out. I'm fine right now, though, Bob said, finishing with the thought. I hope.
Daniel was pushing the van as they screamed across the Chattahoochee River. As Whitesburg came into view, Daniel's heart sank.
Oh, shit.
Bob looked up as they approached the town.
It's all right.
He looked back at Christy and Jean.
See if you can find something white we can hang out the window.
How do you know these people are all right? Daniel asked, his eyes darting back and forth between Bob and the approaching roadblock on the outskirts of the small hamlet. Christy handed Bob a white t-shirt, and he looked at Daniel.
Easy. They're not wearing masks, and some of them are in uniform.
Then Daniel noticed it too, and it struck him. When he saw the men on the ATVs, what had scared him the most was the fact they were all wearing the mask. It added an immediate air of uncertainty to them. The people just ahead of them now wore no masks. Bob pushed the shirt out the gun port and held on to it.
Just slow down and ease up to them, he said,
as the men manning the barricade moved to take cover behind the dump truck blocking the road. Daniel did as he said and let the van roll very slowly forward as Bob tried to wag the shirt hanging out the side. When they were within shouting range, one of the men in uniform yelled for them to stop. Daniel did as ordered. Grabbing the door handle, Bob said,
"Here goes nothing."
Before he could open the door, Daniel shouted at him,
"What the hell are you doing?"
Bob opened the door.
"Well, I can't lean out and talk to them."
And he swung the door open and stepped out, t-shirt in hand. Holding the shirt up, he called out,
"Is there a doctor? I need help."
The man in uniform shouted back,
"Tell everyone to get out."
"Oh, shit," Daniel muttered. Bob looked back and jerked his head.
"Come on, everyone out. Leave the guns in the truck."
"This is bullshit, Bob,"
Teague called back.
"Just get out."
The group did as ordered and stepped out, Daniel and Christy both holding their hands up. Jean walked up beside Bob and folded his arms over his chest. Teague, not wanting to get far from his rifle, stayed at the back of the van. Once everyone was out, three men came out from behind the truck, weapons shouldered, and began to advance towards them. As they came close enough, one of them called out,
"What happened to you?"
Bob looked down at his blood-covered pants and called back,
"We had some trouble on the other side of the river."
"Where are you coming from?"
"Atlanta."
The man questioning them exchanged words with his companions, then looked back over his shoulder.
"Jason, bring your bag and come out here."
A young man came trotting out of the dollar store parking lot on the side of the road. A fire truck sat there with a couple of police cars. After conferring with the man giving orders, the group began to approach the van.
"Everyone just stay where we can see you."
The young man with the bag came up to Bob and asked,
"What happened?"
Bob shrugged. "Bunch of guys on ATVs came after us. I guess it's a bullet."
Jason looked back at the uniformed man, who nodded. Taking Bob by the arm, he said,
"Sit down. Let's have a look."
Christy stepped forward.
"I'm a nurse. Let me help."
Jason nodded, and she came up to help Bob get to the ground. The tension seemed to ease a bit, and the uniformed man came closer, lowering his weapon to a low ready. He looked at Daniel.
"You say it was guys on ATVs?"
With his hand still up, Daniel nodded and replied,
"Yeah, there was a bunch of them."
"We've been having trouble with them, too."
Teague came up to the front of the van.
"Well, there's fewer of them now."
The uniformed man looked up, surprised.
"You take some of them out?"
Teague nodded.
"A few."
The uniformed man now slung his rifle.
Good. We saw the smoke and could hear the shooting. They've been ambushing people on the road. The body of the woman flashed back into Daniel's mind.
We saw... There was a naked woman lying in the road. She was dead. At least, he really hoped she was, before he ran her over. She was surely dead now, though.
Who are they? Teague asked.
The man shrugged.
Hell if I know. Could be the damn high school football team for all we know.
Jutting his chin towards the man, Teague asked,
Who are you?
Chief of Police, Amos Sutherland.
Daniel relaxed and lowered his hands.
Thanks for the help. He looked at Bob. We were really worried about him.
Christie looked up and smiled.
It's not bad. A bullet grazed the top of his thigh.
A bullet had come in through the door of the truck and cut a diagonal path from Bob's hip to 3 inches above his knee. It was a nasty-looking wound, but certainly not fatal, if managed to prevent infection.
Looks bad, Daniel said.
Bob looked up at him.
Thanks, buddy.
Jason, a paramedic with the volunteer fire department, didn't look up from his work, bandaging the wound.
It's not bad. Might be a little uncomfortable for a while, but you'll live. You're lucky. If that round had hit your pelvis, you'd probably already be dead, or at least wish you were.
Well, you're a cheerful bunch,
Bob replied, grimacing as Jason worked.
What's your plan? The chief asked.
We're headed to Texas. They still have power and have told the feds to pound sand, Teague said. Daniel didn't like him saying so much. Not that what we were doing was a secret, but to the wrong people it could create a problem. Fortunately, from the chief's response, it wasn't an issue. Chief Sutherland snorted and spat on the ground.
Screw the feds. This is all their mess anyhow. And then they go and shut off the power, too.
I think this is just the tip of the iceberg, Bob said.
The chief looked at him.
I think you're right. I think it's going to get a whole lot worse before it even starts to get better. What's your plan now?
Bob looked around, then at the van. His seat and the floor around it was covered in blood.
I'd like to clean that thing up before we leave.
You should stay here for the night, Jason said. You need to give this wound dressing and medication some time to set up. Otherwise, you'll be bleeding all the time.
He's right, Christie said. Bob ran a hand through his hair.
I'd like to get back on the road. We have a long way to go and only just got started.
Another day won't hurt, Bob, Daniel said. Then he looked at the chief. We'd like to stay the night if that's all right with you.
Sutherland nodded.
I don't mind a bit. Not sure where you'll stay, though.
We can stay in the van, Daniel said. It's a camper, and I also have a tent. Jason finished bandaging Bob and stood up.
Drive down to the fire department. There's a grassy spot around back you guys could use.
Sutherland nodded. That's a good idea. You'll be close so Jason can keep an eye on that leg and check it again before you head out.
The group got back in the van and followed Jason's directions to the fire station just down the road. Whitesburg was a small town, so the fire department and police utilized the same property. Daniel drove the van around behind the station and parked it under the shade of a pecan tree. Since it was a sportsmobile and set up to camp, it had an awning. Jean helped Daniel pull it out. A couple of camp chairs were pulled out, and they set up home for the night. As Daniel was setting up, Christie went to find Jason. She caught up with him inside the fire station, restocking the bag he'd used to treat Bob. He looked up as she came through the open bay door and smiled.
Hi.
She smiled back.
Hey.
She pointed at his bag.
Restocking?
He nodded as he dropped some bandages into the bag.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. You saw what I used for a bandage.
Jason smiled.
Good idea, really. Never thought of it.
It's all I had. I was hoping I could get some stuff from you so I could take care of his wounds. The corners of his mouth pulled down, and he turned to face her. I'd like to, but we don't keep that much here. Christy's shoulders slumped.
Oh. Well, I'll figure something out.
Jason looked off and wagged a finger. I have an idea. The dollar store sells stuff like that.
I don't have much cash.
He shook his head. Oh, you couldn't buy it anyway. Sutherland closed the store. But if you talk to him, he'll probably let you get some stuff. But do it before I talk to him.
Because I'm going to clean the place out, now that I've thought of it.
He's back up at the roadblock, right?
Yeah. Hey, I'm going back if you want to ride. You can get what you need. Help me get the rest, and then I'll bring you back.
Christy smiled. That would be great. Let me go tell Daniel where I'm going.
Jason nodded and said, just meet me at the truck.
Christy left to go tell Daniel. When he heard, he leaned in and kissed her.
That's why I love you. You're so smart.
I would never have thought of that.
She smiled back. Will you still love me if I tell you it wasn't my idea? It was that paramedics. He's going to give me a ride back after we clean all the medical stuff out.
Daniel smiled and pulled her in.
I'd still love you, no matter what.
And he kissed her. She left to go find Jason, and Daniel pulled a chair up and sat down.
What's going on?
Bob asked. Daniel threw his feet up on a cooler they had packed to bring as much of Bob's remaining food as they could.
She's going to get some bandages and stuff to take care of your leg.
Bob nodded.
She's a smart girl.
Daniel smiled in agreement.
Yes, she is.
Jean sat slumped in a chair.
What's for dinner? I'm hungry.
Bob looked at him and chuckled.
Jean, my old friend, you're going to have to get used to being hungry.
Not tonight,
Jean replied. And they wouldn't tonight. Daniel went out and collected a bunch of fallen limbs from the many pecan trees scattered around Whitesburg. Using those, he built a fire and opened his fold-out grill he kept in the van for those trips to the mountains he loved so much. While he worked on getting a good bed of coals to cook over, Jean rubbed potatoes with oil and wrapped them in foil. The shit may have hit the fan, but for now, they could still eat well. Christy held her hand out the window of Jason's truck as they rode through town. Just as she did when she was a kid, she let her hand surf on the air current, rushing past the window. At least for the moment, she was removed from her situation, taken back to a simpler time.
You guys really going to try and get to Texas? Jason asked.
Coming back to the moment, she looked at him.
Looks that way.
It was a snap decision. Jean talked to some guy out there, and we decided to go.
Jason jerked his head.
That's a hell of a decision to make.
Christy shrugged.
It's a chance. It looks like the rest of the country is in trouble. You should have seen Atlanta. It was crazy. We saw the military come in and just shoot people.
She shivered. It was horrible.
Looking at Jason, she asked, what are you guys going to do?
Jason had one hand on the wheel and thought about the question for a minute.
I don't know. We live here. This is home. We're going to do our best to help our neighbors.
I just hope we don't come across any more of those guys like earlier. Christy got quiet and picked at her hand.
I killed one of them.
Jason was surprised and looked over.
What?
She nodded. This guy on a motorcycle came up beside the van with some kind of machine gun. He was looking right at me with that scary mask. I just pointed the pistol and shot it. I know I hit him.
They were wearing masks?
She nodded.
Yeah, with that skull thing on it.
She looked at him. It was really scary.
Jason drummed his thumb on the wheel.
I know. We've seen them. We've been trying to keep them away from town. So far, we've been lucky.
They reached the dollar store, and Jason parked in a handicap spot close to the entrance. There was a man in camo clothes sitting on a milk crate, by the front door. He stood up as they got out of the truck.
"Hey, Jason, what's up?"
the man asked, cradling a shotgun in the crook of his arm.
"Hey, Jim, I'm going to take all the medical stuff out of there and move it to the fire station."
Jim nodded.
"That's probably a good idea."
He pushed the door open as they approached to let them in. Christy and Jason both grabbed carts as they went in and headed to the aisle of first aid items. They cleaned the shelves of bandages and tape, alcohol, hydrogen peroxide, band-aids, and antibiotic ointments. Anything that could be used to treat a wound was taken. They also took all the over-the-counter medications and piled them into a cart. As they were collecting things, Christy tossed a couple of tubes of toothpaste and some sticks of deodorant into her cart. She was with all these guys and knew at some point some of them would start to stink. With that in mind, she added a few bars of soap. She also took the opportunity to grab a few other things, like washcloths and a couple of bath towels, things they hadn't thought about before. She also found the aisle with charcoal and like items and grabbed another can of lighter fluid. She remembered Gene's fire bombs and wanted to make sure he had what he needed. When she returned and dropped it in the cart, Jason raised an eyebrow. Christy smiled. "In case I need to start a fire to boil anything." He half laughed.
"Yeah, okay."
But he said nothing more. The last item she added to her cart was a couple of boxes of tampons and maxi pads. They'd already proven their usefulness, aside from the obvious, and she certainly didn't want to need them and not have them. With the carts loaded, they pushed them out to the truck. Jason grabbed a stack of the plastic bags from the register on their way out. At the truck, they bagged the items up, with Jim's help, keeping them sorted. Christy made sure to bag her stuff up separately. When they finished, the bed of the truck was full of the yellow bags, their tops tied off. When they were finished, Jason told Jim to let Sutherland know what he'd done. Jim nodded and waved as they got back in the truck. Christy helped Jason unload everything into the fire station before picking up her bags.
"Thank you for the help, Jason. I really appreciate it."
He pointed at the bags.
"With that stuff, you should be able to take care of him."
She looked at the bags. "I think I've got everything I need."
"Thanks for the help, too. Now that I have all this stuff here, it won't disappear."
Christy smiled and headed for the door.
"No problem. If I can help with anything else, just let me know."
She went back out behind the station. The smell of cooking meat greeted her as she rounded the corner and a smile spread across her face. She was hungry. At the van, she set the bags down and pulled up a chair.
"Those steaks look so good. I'm starving."
"You ain't the only one, sister," Jean replied.
Daniel looked up from the small grill, a steak suspended from a fork.
"They'll be ready in a sec."
He flipped the steak, and it landed with a satisfying hiss as fat dripped from the cuts, causing little flares in the coals below. As he watched the meat cook, Daniel smiled.
"You know how much food there is in my place?"
He shook his head.
"When all this started, I made a run to the store and took a van load home. What a waste."
Teague kicked his feet out towards the fire.
"It won't go to waste. Someone will break in there and make a nice score."
Christy unfolded one of the camp chairs and sat down.
"I guess this is what it's come to."
"It hasn't even gotten bad yet. It's still pretty early. If today is any indication, it's going to be a long ride to Texas," Bob said.
"But we've made it through it this far.
We're all alive," Teague said.
Bob took a deep breath.
"We were really lucky."
He lifted his leg.
"Real lucky."
"Are those steaks done yet?"
Gene asked, causing Bob to laugh. Daniel poked one with a fork and inspected it.
"Yeah, I think they are."
Plates were produced, each getting a slab of meat. Gene raked the taters out of the coals and put one on each plate as well. From the cooler, came butter and salt, and pepper shakers were set out as well. As everyone ate, Jean lamented the short future for butter. Mixing his potato with the melted butter on his plate, he said,
"Man, what are we going to do when there's no more butter?"
Taking up a scoop of the mash, he said,
"How are we going to eat potatoes with no butter?"
Bob laughed.
"Don't worry, Jean. Potatoes won't last long either.
Once the food we have runs out, we'll be down to eating whatever we can find," Teague said, as he chewed on a bite of steak.
"Hopefully we'll be in Texas by then," Daniel replied.
Bob nodded.
"Hopefully."
When dinner was done, Teague volunteered to clean up the plates and forks. Daniel left the grill and the fire to burn off whatever might be on it. Then, the sleeping arrangements were discussed. It was decided Bob should sleep in the van because of his injury. Daniel said he and Christy would set up his tent and sleep in that. Teague, being Teague, decided to sleep on the roof of the van. Jean would recline in the passenger seat and sleep in that. Daniel set the small North Face tent up quickly, having done so countless times before. Christy inflated the sleeping pads and unrolled the bags on top. With the light fading and little else to do, she bid everyone a good night and went into the tent. Daniel and Jean helped Bob into the van and onto the small bed that folded down. Teague and Daniel sat by the low glow of the coals of the fire for a while. Daniel was still a little shaken up and tense from the ride. Teague was relaxed and acted as though it was nothing unusual. Maybe it wasn't for him, but this lifestyle was going to take some time for Daniel to get used to. Daniel stretched out on a foot and pushed the end of a limb into the fire.
"You okay?" Teague asked. He shrugged.
"I guess so. This just seems so, I don't know, weird, I guess. Hard to imagine something like today happening and there are no police or anything. Or that people would actually do something like that in the first place."
"The only thing that held the animals in check was the thought that there was a limit that they could get caught and caged for a while. Now they know that's gone. People are going to do the very things they've always wanted to. Others, just more of what they've always done."
Daniel shook his head.
"You sure have a shitty outlook."
Teague leaned forward, resting on his elbows, and spat into the fire. "It's realistic. Even you. Why did you drive the speed limit? It's an arbitrarily imposed limit on your actions. Why do it? Because you didn't want a speeding ticket? This is the same thing. Just on a more violent scale. Someone wants something. They'll just take it. See a pretty girl? No sense trying to get a date. Just knock that bitch down and take it. That's how they'll think."
"I guess I hoped for more from people."
Teague cocked his head to the side and looked down his nose at Daniel.
"You, my friend, lived in a fantasy world. That whole, let's all just get along, only worked for those that obey the law in the first place. If you're inclined not to follow the law, then none of that means shit to you. So now you have to decide how you're going to deal with people."
Daniel leaned forward and picked up a small twig with several dry leaves on it, tossing it into the fire. After a brief moment, it flared it into a bright flame.
"I guess we established that today."
Teague snorted and sat back.
"I don't think you have yet. I've known you for your whole life. You're a decent guy. You don't have that mean streak in you."
Looking Daniel in the eye, he said,
"But you'd better develop it."
He pointed to the tent where Christy was sleeping.
"You've got to protect her. I mean, she did a good job today, but you know what men would do to her? She's beautiful."
Daniel looked at the tent and nodded.
"You know, I took her for granted for a long time, but this," he waved his hands in the air, "whatever this is, woke me up.
I know now what she means to me, and I'll do everything in my power to protect her.
Teague nodded, a thin smile cutting his lips.
She's a prissy little thing, but I will too.
Christie's muffled voice came from the tent.
I heard that, Teague.
Daniel shook his head, and Teague laughed, saying,
You were supposed to. Now go to sleep, Miss Priss.
Screw you, Teague, came the muffled reply.
Love you too, Teague replied.
Daniel's head was hanging, and he was shaking it.
How much you think she heard? He asked.
All of it, Christie replied, as her sleeping bag rustled inside the tent.
Come to bed.
Teague laughed.
Sounds like the boss has spoken. You better get going.
Daniel looked at the tent.
Yeah, she has.
Chapter 10 The next morning, everyone was up early. Christie insisted they eat breakfast before leaving, and she prepared a pot of oatmeal from the large cardboard container they had brought with them. As they ate, Bob commented on the flavor, asking what she did to it.
I added a little salt. No one thinks of it, but it really sets it off. Plus, I made it with milk and not hot water. Add a pinch of sugar and you're good to go.
Salt? Really? Never thought of it. I only ate this stuff because my doctor told me to. Said it would help my cholesterol, but this...
He held up a spoonful.
This is really good.
Christie smiled.
Thanks, Bob. It'll stick with you for a while.
Once breakfast was done, they quickly rinsed the bowls and loaded up in the van. Jean had cleaned the passenger seat before going to bed the night before. He started a pot of coffee on Daniel's gas stove and took the time to make the seat presentable. With everything ready, they loaded into the van and drove around the station and headed back the way they came into town. Sutherland was at the roadblock when they pulled up. Daniel stopped beside him.
Thanks for letting us stay here last night. We appreciate it.
Sutherland nodded.
No problem. Good luck to you folks.
Bob leaned forward and asked,
Where's that paramedic?
Sutherland looked back towards town.
He's probably getting some sleep. We had someone get burned last night, so he was up pretty late. Pass along to him my appreciation for his help yesterday. You guys went out of your way for us.
Sutherland waved him off.
It's what we do. We're here to help.
Best of luck to you, Chief, Daniel said, as he started to pull away. As they left Whitesburg in the rearview mirror, Christie scooted up between the front seats. How far down here are we going?
I don't want to get near those guys again.
Daniel pointed up the road.
This isn't the road we came in on. This one heads kind of west. We came in from the south.
Her relief obvious, Christie sat back in her seat. They were on the Georgia 5, a rural route that ran through lightly populated areas. The idea was to stay away from interstates and cities. Daniel pushed the van up to about 65 as farm fields and pastures rushed by. The air coming through the many broken windows was cool and refreshing. Roopville was the first settlement of any size they came to, but they cruised over South Park without incident. Bob was navigating and told Daniel to make a left when Highway 5 dead-ended into Georgia 100, which was also Highway 5 until it crossed the Alabama line and changed to Highway 48. They passed through many small hamlets in Alabama, like Graham, Hawk, and Morrison Crossroad. The road was empty for the most part, though they occasionally passed another car or truck. There seemed to be many more tractors moving around than cars. Passing fields and farms, they saw many tractors out working. From the newest GPS-guided industrial machines to turn-of-the-century farmalls. For their part, farmers were still going to work every day. After a few hours of driving, Bob asked Daniel to pull over. They were between Lineville and Ashland. Christy seconded Bob's request. It was time for a pee break. Daniel picked one of the few places where the trees came right up to the road, and most of the area was farm fields. As soon as he stopped, Teague was out the rear door with his carbine at the ready. Gene and Christy helped Bob out since he was stiff from sitting. As soon as he was on his feet, he waved his helpers off.
I can walk.
Christy retrieved a roll of toilet paper from the van and grabbed Daniel's arm.
I'm going behind the van. Keep everyone over here, please.
Bob laughed at her modesty.
You ain't got nothing I haven't seen before.
TP in hand, as she rounded the van, Christy replied.
Maybe not, but you haven't seen this one, and you're not going to.
Bob laughed as he shook a cigarette from his pack and lit it. He leaned against the van and asked Daniel to get the Atlas. Daniel grabbed it and opened it up on the hood.
Where are we?
With the cigarette pinched between his fingers, Bob pointed at the map.
We're about right here on Highway 9.
He ran his finger along the road.
The problem is up here. We're not too far from Talladega and Birmingham to the north. I don't want to go anywhere near those two. We can go south down here to Sylacauga, but we'll need to cross the Coosa River at some point.
We need a bridge on a secondary road. Daniel studied the map. If we go south towards Rockford, we can pick up 22 there and cross the river. Doesn't look like a major road. Better than going north and running the risk of having trouble and being forced farther north towards Talladega. Bob finished his cigarette and flipped it into the road.
I like that. It keeps us to the south and away from any craziness around these bigger cities.
Hearing a noise in the roof of the van, Daniel looked up to see Gene.
What are you doing? He asked.
Gene was struggling with one of the drums of fuel they'd tied up there.
Since we're stopped, let's top off the fuel. Better to have it in the tank than up here. Plus, we never know when we really need to be able to outrun someone.
Good idea. Let me help, Daniel said. Christy was finished with her task and came around the van with a camp chair, telling Bob to sit down. He protested until her hands landed on her hips and she cocked her head to the side. He knew he was beat and sat as instructed. As much as he hated it, Christy insisted he wear shorts to make it easier to clean his wounds. The pants he'd been wearing were lost to the shears of Jason. Bob plopped into the chair, and Christy went to work, cleaning the wound. She removed the dressing and inspected the gouges the bullet had torn into his leg. She took a bottle of contact lens saline from a bag and a small bottle of betadine solution. Using a styrofoam cup, she poured a couple of fingers of saline and added the betadine, mixing the two. Bob watched what she was doing and asked,
"Is that safe to use on an open wound? Isn't that for your eyes?"
Christy didn't stop her work and replied, "It's just sterile saline. Same thing they give you in an IV."